From bureaus worldwide, this is FSN.
Yeah, cheers, Ollie. Thanks very much. Welcome to Monday's programme. March Madness. Weather Madness. We had it all yesterday. Snow, hailstones, thunder and lightning. Light drizzle and torrential rain. Somebody was messing with the machine, I tells you. I say that in jest, but you never know. Someone turned on the harp and messed with the jet stream because we had it all. I jest. I have no idea. Dean Henderson on the programme later on. Top man, welcome to Monday's show.
Welcome back to the most listened to independent radio show in Europe. It's your Richie Allen Show.
Yeah, I know that. I know the last thing you need is my enthusiasm on a Monday. You don't need it. You're fed up, I know. Tell you what, we'll talk more about that in a minute. So we will. That's what we'll do. Monday, the 11th of March, 2019.
It's the Richie Allen Show. Broadcasting live on richieallen.co.uk and multiple platforms around the world. And now, here's your host, Richie Allen.
Yes, Dean Henderson will be on the program live from Missouri, from the Ozarks in the second hour. Author, journalist, brilliant guy. You've heard Dean on the program before. Before that, though, I'm going to round up the big stories of the day, with the emphasis being on one story, and that's Brexit. But you won't be bored, I promise you. All right, then. I'll uncross my fingers and I'll say that again. You won't be bored. This is your Richie Allen Show, live on Fab Radio 2 in Manchester. Trigger warning, tune in radio. We're on Spotify, iTunes, YouTube, everywhere else. It's Monday. Monday. And because I will forget to do this, I want to give a shout out to Stevie. How you doing, Stevie? Who sent me a message a bit earlier on and asked would I give a mention to something that's taken place in Queen's University in Belfast 2 weeks from Wednesday. Of course I will. It's a free event. It won't cost you a sausage, nor will it cost you a bean. It's being put on by PositiveMoney.org, a group I know very well and I'm very fond of. And they're putting a talk on at Queen's University Belfast, the Senate Room, Wednesday, March 27th, between 7 and 9 p.m. It's free. Ever wondered where money comes from and why there isn't enough? The creation of money, a story that spans millennia. If you're listening in Belfast and you know this already, why not drag a friend with you to have a listen to that? PositiveMoney.org for more details. The Senate Room, Queen's University, Belfast, Wednesday, March 27th, between 7 and 9, and it won't cost you a penny. How about that? All right? See, this is the thing I like. I like these things. I like people doing stuff, you know, trying to get people to pay attention to things that maybe they have been dismissive of in the past. Good week lined up for you. John Wedger on tomorrow about the Westminster leg of the independent inquiry into child sex abuse. And Christopher Monckton, Lord Monckton of Brenchley. Monckton of Brenchley! Will be on the programme tomorrow to talk about the Brexit betrayal. Speaking of Brexit. Shut up. Shut up, whinging, you salivating dogs. I'm going to talk about it, but I'm not going to... You're not going to be sitting there crying with boredom and falling asleep. Tis a big week, you know. Tis a big week. Let's have a look at the bbc.co.uk/news, BBC News website. A second Commons vote on the Prime Minister's Brexit deal will go ahead tomorrow, according to ministers, as the Labour Party says the government was in chaos. Ministers said talks were continuing with the EU and the legal advice on the Irish backstop would be updated before MPs start debating tomorrow. So legal advice on the Irish backstop would be updated before MPs start debating tomorrow, because before the vote on Theresa May's deal with the EU, there will of course be a debate. Unconfirmed reports say that Theresa May will travel to Strasbourg a bit later on. The European Union has said it is now up to MPs to decide the next steps for Brexit, and the European Union says it remains even committed to agreeing a deal. Labour leader Jeremy Corbyn said there hasn't been a single change to the deal since it was defeated by MPs in January, She lost it by 230 votes, you might remember. Record numbers. Following speculation the vote could be postponed or downgraded, the Prime Minister's office said the motion to be debated would be published later on Monday, although, strangely, no details of what it might contain. Sky News reporter Michelle Clifford said she believed that the UK-EU parties reached a deal on the backstop on Saturday, but that the Cabinet said no. This is interesting. Michelle Clifford here saying that her information is the two negotiating teams did come to a deal on the backstop on Saturday, but however, apparently the Cabinet scuppered that. Michelle Clifford.
Now, interestingly, if you ask what's the point of her going there now, what we've been hearing today is actually that a deal was very close to being secured on Saturday. EU ambassadors were briefed today by the negotiating teams. They were told a deal was very, very close indeed, but it was actually vetoed by the Cabinet, and Theresa May had to call Jean-Claude Juncker yesterday to inform him of that. So maybe she thinks there is something still to push for. She isn't giving up. As I say, she spoke to Jean-Claude Juncker yesterday, spoke to him again today. She's also been speaking to a number of European leaders. She really is using every last hour and every last minute to try and get this deal over the line. Of course, the critical issue still remains the backstop. There are differences between what the UK and the EU are demanding. Can they be resolved? I think a lot of people are now looking not to this week, but to next week. There's a European summit. Some are thinking that the real deal could be done there with the EU 27 leaders present. But for the moment, we can't get confirmation that Theresa May will be going to Strasbourg, but it might make some sense for her to do so, given that there is this notion that there was a deal very close to being secured on Saturday.
Yeah, so if there is a meaningful vote tomorrow, it looks like it'll be another defeat for Theresa May. As I said, caned last time. If she loses tomorrow, I mentioned this on Sunday View yesterday, but it's important to repeat it. If she does lose, then on Wednesday, there will be a vote on whether to take no deal out of the hands of the government. In other words, a vote on preventing the UK leaving with no deal, which is crazy. Then on Thursday, there would be a vote on extending Article 50. You with me? Okay. Now, listening to UK media, television and radio today, there were some very interesting interviews on this, putting what is happening into perspective. Stay with me, stay with me, stay in the room. Suella Braverman is a Tory MP. She favours leaving the European Union. On Radio 5 Live this morning, Suella Braverman says the European Union has been intransigent. Professor Nicky Campbell... Professor, he's far from a professor. The presenter, I should say, Nicky Campbell, invokes John Major and he mentions dangerous far-right English nationalism. And when he said that, well, my old ears pricked up. Suella Braverman with Nicky Campbell.
Some people will say, you Eurosceptics, it's rich coming from you calling people obstructive and uncompromising. John Major was saying recently, it's your, if I may, it's your strain of Euroscepticism within the Conservative Party that has been tearing your party apart for years, causing mayhem, this strange obsession, this fixation that you've had with Europe, this kind of brand of very dangerous right-wing English nationalism he's spoken about. And you're calling the European Union obstructive?
I am. I think the blame at this moment does lie very much with the EU. I don't think I've ever been really fixated with the European question. I'm doing is trying to honour the referendum result, which is to leave the customs union, leave the single market and stop free movement and the Court of Justice continuing over our laws. And I'm trying to honour the manifesto pledge from 2017, which repeated all of those promises. And that's all I'm looking at. I'm a very, very simple person. I just want to...
No, you're not.
..the government to honour those promises.
You're an intelligent person. Listen, did the British public vote to leave the customs union and the free market, as you put it? It's specifically?
Well, during the referendum, David Cameron, then campaigning for Remain, George Osborne, all the main campaigners who were very, very high profile in that campaign made it very, very clear that leaving the EU would mean leaving the single market and the customs union. They are... They are what the EU is. If you don't leave the customs union or the single market, you're not leaving the EU.
Yes, and that has been one of the most persistent lies that me and you, or you and me, that we're a bunch of tobacco-chewing, slack-jawed yokels, dungaree-wearing, barefooted morons who didn't know what was going on 2.5 years ago. Good night, John Boy. That's what it's all about. That we didn't know that by leaving, we'd actually be leaving. Who would have believed that? That if you voted leave, that we'd actually leave. But that's what they've been saying. And she's right. They were told repeatedly, over and over again, that if we would be screwed if we left and that we wouldn't have the protections of the single market in the customs union. This is true. I won't waste your time playing the audio of David Cameron, the pig fancier, and George Osborne, the pigeon fancier. I won't play all that audio. I've played it too many times, and all the Labour MPs who said at the time, before the 23rd of June 2016 referendum, they kept saying, be careful now, because if you vote, you're out, you're finished. It'll be catastrophic, you'll have no single market. But yeah, we're a bunch of deliverance types playing banjos. And we were that thick we hadn't a clue, apparently. They're saying it over and over and over again. People did know. By the way, Nikki Campbell mentioned dangerous English nationalism. I want you to keep dangerous English nationalism in mind. Because nationalism has been turned into a dirty word, hasn't it? That it is wrong and sinister and hateful to be nationalistic in your outlook, you rabid racist Jew. It's been an amazing thing over the years, and it hasn't been a post-Brexit thing. Nationalism and those who have a nationalist outlook have been on the run and have been put on the run by UK media for years and years and years. I'm not saying there aren't a bunch of knuckle-draggers, right? Tommy Robinson supporters, lunatic. I'm not saying that. Yes, they exist. But nationalism doesn't mean those lunatics. Right? It's what the media wants you to believe. Anyway, keep it in mind. Far-right nationalism, as Nikki Campbell mentioned. And John Major. Anyway. So among those who want to properly leave the European Union, there's a sense of alarm today, Monday, March 11th. Let's hear from Marc Francois, Conservative MP and Vice Chair of the European Research Group. They are the so-called hard Brexiteers. He was live on Sky News this morning, and he reminds the Sky News audience that 3 years ago, and if you're in the UK, you will remember this, the government spent millions sending a letter to every household in the UK, a one-sided letter now, urging us all to vote Remain. And in that letter, which cost the government millions and was very one-sided, telling us to vote Remain, specific promises were made. 3 years ago, almost to today, those letters arrived. Here's Conservative MP Marc Francois.
I brought with me the leaflet that some of your viewers may recall went through the doors 3 years ago. This is the one the government paid £9 million of our money to try and persuade us to vote to remain. But at the back, I don't know how well this will come out on camera, it says, a once-in-a-generation opportunity. This is what we were told before we voted. And the key quote is, this is your decision. The government will implement what you decide. And the British people, at the cost of £9 million, were promised that by the government, that they'd implement the decision. Well, the people voted to leave, 17.4 million, a majority
of...
a majority of well over a million votes.
People are going to be saying, we voted to leave, but MPs haven't got their act together. Is this not a massive failure by MPs, yourself included, not to deliver what the people want?
No, it is a deliberate act by some members of the cabinet, like Amber Rudd and Philip Hammond, by some very senior civil servants, like Ollie Robbins, and a number of very Europhile MPs in the House of Commons from a number of parties, to deliberately frustrate the decision of the British people. These people know exactly what they're doing. They're trying to...
Well, they'll say they're not frustrating the process. They're trying to get the best deal.
No, sorry. The withdrawal agreement does not take us out of the European Union. If you read it in detail, it
does not. But it's the agreement. It's not a deal. It's an agreement to get us to the next stage.
Well, it's a draft international treaty, in actual fact. And if Parliament, which is why it's so important, because if we were to pass it in a meaningful vote, and then we'd have to ratify it in an act of Parliament because it's a treaty...
Okay.
If we were to do that, we'd be bound forever in international law, and it involves this wretched backstop, which means we could be in a customs union forever, which means we couldn't do our own international trade deals around the world, which means we haven't really left the European Union.
Very important that the withdrawal agreement they're voting on tomorrow doesn't take the UK out of the EU, and if it's ratified at any stage in the future... It means never, ever leaving the European Union. There should be no agreement. There should be no deal. Just leave. Francoise then reminds the Sky presenter that the law is very clear that if the withdrawal agreement is rejected and it happens that and it brings us up to March 29th, there should be legally no votes on extending Article 50. We should just leave. And he makes this very clear here. I'm no fan of this guy, but what he's saying is factually correct. After this gets voted down, and if May has got time in 2 weeks to bring another version of this back, once you get to March 29th, there should be no extension. And that is the letter of the law. He explains it well here. Let's have a listen to Marc Francoise.
What people need to remember is the default position in law is that we leave on the 29th of March, both under EU law, under Article 50, and under UK law, under what's called the EU Withdrawal Act that Parliament yep. passed last summer. So you say, what is the way forward? Yep. Well, if we don't want the withdrawal agreement, the way forward under the law, as it now stands, is that we would leave the European Union on the 29th of March, which is what many people in this country are expecting. We then trade temporarily on WTO terms. Okay. But in the long term, I think we all want a free trade agreement, sometimes called Super Canada, which means we can trade perfectly properly with our European partners with low or even no tariffs to our mutual advantage. So we can carry on economically, but we will no longer be under the control of the European Union and our country will be free.
Exactly. Remember that low or zero tariffs in the mutual interest of us and the European Union. It would be in their interest to do that, as they are more dependent on the UK as a market than the UK is dependent on the European Union. Simply put, they sell more to the UK than the UK sells to them. So they're playing fast and loose with the rules of the European Union, the established rules that govern a country leaving. There is no legal right for MPs to have a vote on taking no deal off the table or voting on extending the Article 50 process. There is no legal right. This is what John Bercow, the Speaker of the House, did. He tore up centuries of procedure and said, all right then, to hell with the law. You can vote to take no deal off the table and you can vote to extend Article 50. So if May collapses, as I said, tomorrow, or again in a couple of weeks, the UK should leave automatically on March 29th, but of course we won't. You'll remember 2.5 years ago, those of you who have listened to the programme, as far back as that I said this would happen, that the European Union would agree to nothing during the time period of negotiations, that once they suckered people into thinking that there had to be a deal, then they, the European Union, would run the clock down and do nothing to help a deal come about. Remember, it's what I said. I get so much wrong. I got that right. And this is very important what you're going to hear now. Jennifer Baker is an Irish journalist based in Brussels. She's a journalist and is supposed to be impartial. No such thing these days. But she's a Europhile, very pro-European Union. On Radio 5 Live this morning, she said she admired the European Union for its intransigence and its refusal to negotiate in good faith. faith. This is Jennifer Baker, based in Brussels, Europhile. She basically describes here how the European Union operates.
From the perspective of the EU, it's been very clear from day one, these are the things we will do, these are the things we won't do. And in some ways, it's quite impressive how little the EU has sort of moved from its opening position. But, they have seemed to sort of, they feel that they've given quite a lot.
Mm. It's impressive how little the European Union has moved from its position, even though it says that it's moved a lot. Baker then said that the European Union will not agree to change the deal and give guarantees that the backstop will be temporary, and she explains why the European Union won't budge.
You've got all these other countries with their own positions, Angela Merkel's waning star is spoken about quite a lot, but she still holds a great deal of authority in the European Council. Emmanuel Macron, of course, France is not going to move. And they all feel it would be a betrayal of Ireland if they did so. There is also those in Brussels who feel that, Brexit has to hurt in some ways because they want it to be a warning to other countries as well.
Yeah. How interesting. First of all, Merkel and Macron couldn't give a shite about Ireland. The European Union has raped Ireland and wants to continue to do so with whatever is left in Ireland. There's not much left there. The European Union wants Brexit to hurt, she said. This is the Europhile in Brussels. Nikki Campbell, come back on that. She says they want Brexit to hurt.
Do they want us to stay?
Yes, absolutely, 100%. That is, there is no doubt there that, while people may be feeling very frustrated with the EU, with the UK in EU circles at the moment, the default position would be that if there was a second referendum, there would be a big hope that the UK would stay.
That's why they're not moving. This is their ulterior motive, isn't it?
Yes, light dawns on Nicky Campbell's thick haggis head. Took him long enough, didn't it? It only took him 3 years, the BBC presenter. Yes, Nicky, that's why they're not moving. They're gangsters. It's the most undemocratic organisation on planet Earth, man. And it was set up, of course, to be a major pillar of a future one-world government. That's why it matters. To those of you tweeting, it doesn't matter, it's a pantomime. Of course it matters. Of course it does. Because left unchecked, whatever is left of your freedom, of your right to freedom of expression, freedom of thought, your right to live, your right to have a property, your right to prosper, whatever is left of that will be siphoned off as this massive, fascist, undemocratic organisation takes more and more. Dawned on Campbell there. Wow. Wow, so that's why they're doing what they're doing then. They don't want us to leave. I said it a million times in the last 10, 15 years. It was set up to be a massive pillar of that one world government. To render national parliaments no more than, what would you say, executors of EU policy. Yeah, that's about right. National parliaments have become nothing more than executors of EU policy, not representing the interests of their people in Greece, Italy, Spain, the Republic of Ireland and so on, but just basically passing on that which Brussels has decided must happen. They've wrecked the economies of dozens of countries in Europe and they're only getting started. Foisted a false debt on the ordinary folk of Europe, and then when you couldn't pay back that artificial debt, well, they acid stripped your country. It's what they do. It doesn't matter that the people of Europe are saying no to this, because the great unwashed, me and you, and Mickey O'Shea living next door to you, and Paula Johnson living on the other side, next door but one, you are slaves, ants, vermin. We don't matter. It dawns on Campbell. So what did Jennifer Baker say to Nicky Campbell after Nicky saw the light and said, well, that's why they won't move then, because they want us to stay. Jennifer Baker.
Well, I mean, I would say it's an ulterior motive, yes, but it's a very, very, very prima facie explicit motive. I mean, that's been said several times. Donald Tusk, the head of the council, comes out regularly and says, you know, we're very sad that this is happening. We don't really want this to happen. I mean, I think everyone would feel it'd be a tremendous waste of time to have gone through all these negotiations if the UK turns around and stays, and there'd be a lot of head scratching, and the future relationship would be difficult one way or another. But from the EU point of view, it's the single market and the sort of control of EU borders is fundamental. They're not going to budge on that. They're not going to undermine their own position.
It was their prima facie motive, she said, from the get-go. The European Union was out to wreck Brexit. So why negotiate at all? They're gangsters. So why wouldn't you tell them to fuck off? Why not? Because, as I've said 1,000 times before, whether it's Theresa May, whether it's Philip Hammond, whether it's Amber Rudd, or whether it's Yvette Cooper, whether it's Jeremy Corbyn, whether it's Tom Watson, politicians playing in the Premier League, every one of them was compromised many, many years ago. Compromised how, Richie? Well, debt, sex, scandal, something which never came out and is held in a filing cabinet somewhere as these people ascend the political ladder at a speed of knots. Now, Jeremy Corbyn didn't at a speed of knots, of course, but Corbyn became a useful idiot for the cabal in the game of divide and conquer, in the game of identity politics. But all of these people are compromised with Theresa May and her husband. It is corruption. That's why they don't stand up to them. You'll never know what Theresa May or any of these people actually really think about Brexit or the European Union or the European Central Bank, because it doesn't matter. Because as they moved up and up and up and up, as they moved up over the years, the 80s, the 90s, little drops of poison were dropped into their files. Things they were doing that nobody knew they were doing, like I said, sex, money, whatever. The European Union sits back. The commissioners, Tusk, Juncker, the president. Tusk is the president, of course. And the rest of them just laugh. They know it's not going to happen. Matthew D. Rose is a journalist and he's the editor of a book called Brave New Europe. He was on RT's Renegade Inc. programme at the weekend, and it was very good stuff. Now, in researching his book and designing his website, what did Matthew D. Rose discover about European identity and national identity? Listen closely.
We thought there was this European consciousness within the EU, and we've discovered that's not the case.
Why?
People still think nationally. I know this is a word that you aren't supposed to use, but they do, and this is fact. The British still see themselves as citizens of Britain, the Spanish see themselves as citizens of Spain, the Catalans even see themselves as citizens of Catalonia. Who says, I'm European? You have a few exotic people, you have a few people on the payroll of the EU. I don't think most people do. It's the same thing as, you know, people saying, I'm not a citizen of anywhere. I think it's just as abstract. How can you be a citizen of Europe? I'm a citizen of Berlin. This is the place where I politically actually can participate. I can go to a demonstration. I can join a movement. It's here. I can go more regional, for example, in the case of Hambacher Forest,
yes,
the coal mine. I can participate. That's Germany. But I don't go to Catalonia and protest. I don't go to Poland and protest.
So politics is uniquely personal, like economics?
Yes.
Yes, very good this. Very, very good. Matthew D. Rose, author and journalist. Why are Europeans turning away from it? Are we all racist, small-minded, little Englanders? What does he say to that?
What's the reaction now within Europe is the retreat from this, because people have noticed the EU has led them to disaster, at least the majority, and the effects that is having. It's ruined their economies, many nations. It's ruined their living standards. Even in Germany, which everyone thinks is a very wealthy country. You have to remember, 50% of Germans are worse off now than they were 15 years ago.
Why has the EU got this legacy, in your view?
Because the EU has been more concerned with interests of corporations, with the interests of finance, and not with the people in Europe. We've seen it in things like the Constitution, which was for them a real setback because people participated in the political process in the EU. And what did they do? They rejected the bloody Constitution. And what did the EU politicians do? They just changed the name and called it the Treaty of Lisbon and said, treaties no one's allowed to vote on, so let's do that. And this is what they've been doing. It is an undemocratic organization, and people are understanding this. And I think they're resentful because there's just no way of influencing the EU. Ask someone the name of the EU parliamentarian. I bet you 99.9% of Europeans don't know.
This is brilliant and totally true. Most people in this country are, I would say, pig ignorant. Where do we get that from, pig ignorant? Pigs are clever, aren't they? At least I've read they're clever anyway. Ignorance is bliss. If I had to be pigeonholed, and I don't like to be pigeonholed, I would call myself a genuine socialist. Not a social democrat, but a genuine socialist in the vein of Allende and Chavez. And that's as close as you could get to labelling me. I don't have a racist bone in my body. But try and explain what the European Union has done, is doing, and will do to a Twitter user, a social media dweller, who's already one step removed from reality by being on there. That's true, by the way. You're hanging out on social media on your smartphone all the time. You have already removed yourself mentally one step away from actual reality. I really do believe that. So trying to explain this to people, they'll just shout slogans at you. They take pride in their ignorance. It is amazing to me how people have become. It's a post-fact world. It doesn't matter. Then finally from Rose, and it's where we'll leave the European Union. He's asked about membership of the European Union, how it has damaged and devastated countries. And he talks a little bit about Greece. This is, what's his name again? Matthew D. Rose, that's right. I'm thinking Matt Rose, Matthew D. Rose, the author and journalist. So what has it done to Greece?
God, look what they did to Greece. I think Greece is one of the great modern crimes. The difference is 80 years ago, the Germans just sent their army to conquer Greece. But we've learned via financialization, money is just as effective a weapon as armies are.
And a lot cheaper.
And I'm not European, but I live here and I feel a certain responsibility. I am so ashamed of what we have done to the Greek people. I'm really ashamed. It is painful to think about it, what we have done. These are part of our civilization. These are people just like you and me. And we've done this to them. We've ruined their lives. We've forced a lot of the young people to immigrate. There's no excuse for this. It's an absolute scandal. And this is what the EU stands for. And I can understand that people are increasingly upset because a lot of them are affected by this. They are losing their jobs. They're looking, for example, in Germany as in Britain. The rents are increasing. Why are people paying 40 or 50% of the wage for a flat? This is just unheard of.
Yeah. Destroyed Greece. And he asks a brilliant question there. Why are people paying 40 to 50% of their wages for a flat? Why are people in mortgage arrears? You know? Why have they lost their equity in their houses? Because interest rates have changed, or they got screwed by the lender who lent them the money for their mortgage. There are people listening to this program who call people brain dead sheep. They say, oh, they're brain dead sheep, and they have no idea what it is to be alive. I wouldn't say brain dead sheep about anybody, because I know nothing. The older I get, the more that I know nothing compared to what I thought I knew when I was 20, 25, 30. I knew it all, knew everything, the whole story. So I wouldn't call anybody a brain dead sheep, but I would say they have no idea what it is to be alive. But it's not their fault. You know, they think driving to work in a traffic jam at 5 o'clock in the morning, working like a lunatic for a corporation, hoovering down a lunch in 20 minutes, gallons of coffee, to get back to your desk to impress your supervisor. Targets, 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 targets. Fuck it, I'll be opening these emails at home tonight on my time, but I can't complain because I don't want to get in bad with the boss. Into the car after work for more demolition fucking derby on the crazy roads with road rage incidents every 2 minutes. Some guy stuck up your arse 3 millimetres away from your bumper at 60 miles an hour. You get home by 7, you might get home by 7:30, 8 o'clock, too tired to play with the kids. And guess what? Your wife has done the exact same job, but for a different company. Maybe it's not the same job. She's knackered too. She's had the same day as you, but for a different company. It's a fortune for a babysitter. You're up to your tits in debt. No sex drive. Forget about sex. Rinse and repeat every day. Mortgaged up the azoo. And people call that life. That's life. That's life. That's living. Heart attack before you're 50. You can't sleep. You don't know why, but it's because in and out of work, you're glued to your smartphone and living online. You hold your smartphone in your left hand more often than you used to hold your penis in your right hand when you were an adolescent. You're a zombie. That's all you are. So when someone who has escaped that lunacy, like me, and I did escape it, rationally and academically explains it, and I have rationally and academically explained it without ranting and without using bad language to people. What do you get because of the life I just described? Because they are one step removed from reality, because of their addiction to the internet and computers and smartphones and tablets. What do you get when you explain to them rationally, as I've just done in the last half an hour? Well, they swear at you, shout slogans at you and call you a racist. You're a racist. This is the Richie Allen Show for Monday the 11th of March 2019. My name is Richie Allen, by the way. Thanks for joining the programme. A lot of tweets came in there. I will read some of them in a few minutes' time. And I'm hoping very soon Dean Henderson will be live from Missouri. The Ozarks, in fact. Live right now on Fab Radio 2 in Manchester, triggerwarning.tv, my website, and all the rest of the places. Always good to be with you. Big week of programmes coming up. The Brexit madness and plenty more as well. Dean Henderson next. Well, not next, but soon. Back after Chris Rea, The Road to Hell. Chris Rea, The Road to Hell on The Richie Allen Show. The time is 17 minutes to the top of the hour. Dean Henderson has signed in, legend, and will join me after the top of the hour, shortly after the top of the hour. Loads of tweets. Hi to Faisal. How you doing, Faisal? To Patrick, who says Matthew D. Rose knows his onions. He's telling the truth, of course. Faisal says you can blast a loud, angry rant in their faces and tell them what Muppets they are anyway. This is when you're trying to get through to people. Leave your identity. Leave that which you think you are to one side. Forget about what you've read. Forget what somebody else has told you to think. Think for yourself. It is a fascist, undemocratic organisation, a major pillar of the future one world government. The destruction of sovereignty. It couldn't be simpler. How do you concentrate all the power in the hands of a tiny few people? Well, you create an organisation like a European Union. Right. It's as simple as that. And you pretend that it's a very benign thing. You say, well, after the Second World War, we better all come together and huddle up, light the campfire there, and we'll all get on well and we'll never kill one another again. And you get people to believe that was the reason. And then at the very outset of the European Union, the Treaty of Rome and all of that, you get a whole load of ex-Nazis, genuinely. The Nazi Roots of the Brussels EU is one of the most important books ever written by the Rath Foundation. In the early days, it was all Nazis. Because, of course, the international pharmaceutical and oil cartels, helped along by the financial families, the elites, wanted the Germans to win the Second World War so that they could control the spoils of a Nazi-dominated Europe post-45. That's all true. But your children don't hear about that when they go to high school. Don't tell them that. Hi to Ruth, a friend of mine who's listening to this in Australia in the small hours of Tuesday morning. That's right. At least I think it is anyway. How you doing, Ruth? Hi to Warrior Woman, to Cartoon Drunk, to Andrew Bell, to Sean McDonald, to Andy Newman, who says there is a photograph on the BBC News website of Theresa May behind bars. Is there? I must hop on over there in a minute to have a look, Andrew. Andy, even, thank you for that. Hi to Night Sky Photographer. Hi to Paul Paranoid. How you doing, Paul? Thanks for listening today, pal. I appreciate that. Hi to Sarah as well. A lot of excitement about John Wedger coming back on this programme tomorrow. I'm looking forward to that. I'm also looking forward to Chris Monckton coming on. And I promise you that as the week goes on, it's not going to be so Brexit-centric. When I heard some of those interviews this morning that I brought you today in the monologue stroke rant, it was an open goal. I had to bring you this. I'm hoping that you will use it, you know, share it with people who have a different opinion. Cartoon Drunk tweets, pigs have the best sense of smell of any mammal, especially for sniffing out shite. Yes. Is that connected to intelligence? Might well be. It might well be. Again, I've missed a lot of tweets there. Paul Alawi tweets, the Remainers I've debated the referendum with will not be drawn into a conversation about how the European Union is linked intrinsically to banking and how that association is ruining the countries in the south of the continent. Paul, they don't want to know. They don't know basic things like how does the UK government, how does it finance its activities? How does it finance its programme of government? They don't want to know that. They don't want to know that the government sells government bonds to the Bank of England, but not just to the Bank of England, to hedge funds, to businesses, but also to the European Central Bank. Money that doesn't exist. You can buy a government bond yourself with your money. They don't want to know this stuff. It's too complicated. And people have become so narcissistic that they are utterly incapable of moving away from their own position. Their own positions on things become closer to them than their families and their spouses and their best friends. Incredibly. What is a position? There's nothing wrong with being wrong. I'm wrong all the time. I'm not wrong about this, though. This is the thing, you see. Spent my life researching this. But I'm wrong about a lot of things. I don't mind being wrong. It's nice when somebody points out, hey, Richie, you said something the other night. You gave an opinion. It's bollocks, Rich. Have a look at this. All right. Right. Great. Well, thanks. I won't say that again then. But not with the generation that's coming behind us. Now we start to sound like our parents and our grandparents. And we said we never would. We said we'd never blame the generation that is behind us. I'm not blaming them for anything. Like I said, circumstances, not just circumstances, but environmental factors are at play here. They don't choose to be narcissistic. They don't choose to be identitarians. They don't. They don't make a conscious decision. I'm going to be a total arsehole. I'm just going to ignore everything that contradicts anything that I believe. I'm going to block everybody on Twitter and on Facebook, and I am going to refuse to even listen to people who disagree with me. I don't blame them because they don't choose to be like that. They don't. External environmental factors are doing it to them. Food, water, geoengineering. I'm telling you, I know there are people listening to this because they like the politics side of it, but they don't buy into any of what I'm saying right now. I'm telling you, that's what it is. Their addiction to technology. All of this is frying their brains. So they become masses of gelatinous goo that they eat, they go to their place of work, they play on their phones, they're on their phones when they're on the tram, when they're in the train, even when they're parked in their cars in the traffic jams. They are basically, I'm not going to keep going with this. You know what they are, but it's not their fault. Not their fault. Hi to John Whittaker III. How you doing, John? I hope John Whittaker II and John Whittaker Sr. are still alive, by the way. Hi to Robert Doherty as well. Transgender madness reared its ugly head today. I'm going to do one more story before we get Dean Henderson on. Trans women are unsafe, apparently, and it's the media's fault. Who says that? Well, that was said by the Z-list celebrity Monroe Bergdorf, who's a trans woman. Trans women are not safe. They're just not safe. And it's the media's fault. Trans women, I'm not going to repeat it again. Monroe Bergdorf isn't blaming the independent or the alternative media. Monroe Bergdorf is blaming the mainstream media. The 31-year-old gave a speech this weekend at the Women of the World Festival. Even though Monroe Bergdorf is not a woman, Monroe gave an address to the Women of the World Festival. I might get complained to the police now for saying that. I don't say it to upset or to hurt or to mock. I say it because it's true. If you've got a tallywhacker in your underpants, you're a man. Anyone, Monroe gave a speech. Women are unsafe. Trans women are unsafe. And during this speech, it was claimed that the press is making transgender people feel unsafe in public spaces. You have to hear it to believe it. And by it, I mean the speech. Boom, 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 boom. Pish. Do you want to hear Monroe Bergdorf? Won't somebody please think of the trans women? Here's Monroe Bergdorf.
Unfortunately, fortunately, this is my fourth year speaking at WOW, and third year speaking at WOW. I've come 4 years running, and it's always been a real sacred space for me, like a real like mecca of feeling like I'm going to be in a space with people that feel the same way that I do.
But that's not good, though. Why don't you let just a few people in who disagree with you? Just a few, two or three, you know, nice people that can say, I don't think you're a woman, and I think you're making a mockery of women's rights because you're not really a woman. Let's have that debate. So it's not good being in a safe space surrounded by people who agree with you. I would have
said. It's going to be a real cathartic and momentous occasion of the year. And unfortunately, this is the first year that I've felt a sense of dread.
I get your head out of your arse. I felt a sense of dread. Why? Because somebody might say to you, you're not a woman. Who cares? If you think you're a woman, that's all that matters, right?
Coming, and it isn't anything to do with the organisation. Jude is an icon. Round of applause for Jude. unfortunately, it's got to do with the media narrative that trans people are the increasingly hateful narrative that trans women are a threat to cisgender women.
Ah, what the fuck is cisgender women? Do you mean actual women, Monroe? Women with a clitoris and a vagina? Is that what you mean? How have we allowed these nutcases introduce words like cisgender? The media is hateful. It's introducing a hateful narrative. No, it isn't. There are women and men. And some people are born with male and female organs, I know that. Cisgender. Women. Call them what they are. Women, not cisgenders.
Women. And there's absolutely no statistics to suggest that this is the case, yet day after day we are seeing more and more influential women within the media write these articles, which is having a real effect on the lives of trans women especially, and trans people, period.
Yeah, people are disagreeing with us and challenging our lunacy on the internet, and we don't feel safe as a result of it. She's referring, of course, to recent stories in the news about trans women winning cycling races and trans women taking part in other sports and doing very well because they're men. Because they're men. And they're stronger and faster. I did a story last year, do you remember, about a high school in America, 16-year-old built like Mike Tyson, built like, you remember back in 1988 when Ben Johnson cheated at the Seoul Olympics and took anabolic steroids. There was a story last year where a trans woman, so a man, a young boy who identified as a woman, had muscles coming out of everywhere, had a penis but identified as a woman, left every girl in the race. It was a national race, or it was a state championship. The closest girl to this trans woman was 40 or 50 metres behind him. That's what women are complaining about. Women are complaining about the fact that a trans woman, in inverted commas, which is a man who thinks that he's a woman, was able to rape women in a prison in this country. Four women. That's the sort of stuff they're concerned about. They don't care that some men identify as women and wear women's clothes. Nobody cares about that. I certainly don't. I'll fight for any trans woman who says, I can't go here or I can't go there because I'm being discriminated against because I choose to identify as a woman. I'll stand with you. I'll stand with you. I can't get a job because all of these people here, they have openly stated that they don't like people like me. Again, I'll stand with you. But this is madness, this. This is lunacy, this. And it needs to be stopped.
So, yeah.
Munro Burgdorf was not saying very much here.
I was writing my speech this week because I was going to originally do a speech and I just threw it away and, oh God, don't, I'm going to cry. And I need to speak about this.
Oh good God, I'm going to cry. Complete acute narcissistic personality disorder. That's what you're dealing with here, with this person, whatever it is. Whoever it is, whoever she is, whoever he is, whatever it is they think they are. This person, acute narcissistic personality disorder. Oh, I'm going to cry now in a minute. Get over yourself. Get over yourself. And learn to live with the fact that there are people who don't agree with you and that there are people who will never believe that you are a woman, no matter how many times you say that they must believe it.
Think about this. I need to speak about the fact that I'm a very privileged trans woman as I have a job which is... puts me in a lot of privileged spaces, basically. And I just keep...
You're a fucking nobody, and most people on planet Earth have never heard of you.
Keep on thinking about, if I feel this way, what does my sister that is not privileged in any way feel? I don't feel safe because of other women, and that's made me feel... that's really weighing heavily on...
But you're not a woman, you're a man. So you can't say that you don't feel safe because of other women. It's the other women with the genuine safety issues. The issue around safety in prison. The issue around safety in women's shelters. There are women in this country who do have to stay in shelters because their husbands or their boyfriends or whatever are knocking bells out of them morning, noon and night, so they've got to go to a shelter. And what this crank Munro Burgdorf wants is... Burgdorf wants, if a trans woman has been physically assaulted and abused by the trans woman's partner, which is equally as bad for the trans woman as it is for the real woman, Burgdorf wants the trans woman to be allowed to enter the women's shelter. Women don't want to have that.
On me, and it's no way that any woman should feel. So I just want to speak about that, really, and just hopefully... show some vulnerability to get people thinking about how this narrative is affecting even the strongest members of our community.
Do you like yourself much, Munro? Do you like yourself much? These people are fascists. They really are. We identify as whatever we want to identify as. Doesn't matter whether we are or whether we are not. That's fine, by the way. Do what you want. I've said this a million times. I have no problem. Never have had with anybody. Ever. I don't have that sort of prejudicial... bone in my body, as I said earlier on. But don't tell me I have to buy into it. Don't tell me I've almost got to pledge allegiance to it. You know? If you didn't catch the end of Sunday View yesterday, University College Cork, of course, which has that hospital as well, the university, asking its staff to wear a badge, declaring themselves to be an ally of the LGBTQ plus community. Crazy. You've got people who have never had a problem with people, never expressed a problem with people, have just gotten on with people and worked with people, now being asked to wear a badge to prove that they've got no problems with them. What's going on? Oh, it's crazy. More music, and when we come back, we'll have Dean Henderson. How about that, eh? Ah, yeah. It's a Monday. We're all in bad form on a Monday. I'm not actually in bad form at all. This is the Foundation's Build Me Up Buttercup on your Richie Allen Show. I want to say hi to John Martin, who's listening to the programme on the east coast of Spain. And he's listening with Martin, who's a regular listener. John, welcome to the programme. You'll probably never listen again. It's not the best programme to listen to as your first time. I'm normally more moderate than this. I'm normally calmer when it comes to talking about stuff. But thanks for listening today, John. I'm sure the weather is beautiful there in España. It's at times like this, March, April, I suppose, more than any time, the future Mrs. Allen and I miss Spain, because this is when Spain is beautiful. It's like October, November, February, March, April, beautiful. 23, 24, 25 degrees, gorgeous. Ruth, my Australian friend, is going to get herself into trouble. I'm wondering, Richie, if I can identify myself as Aboriginal, because then I can make a claim for the right to claim back the stolen land. Ruth. It's a very good point. This is the type of insanity that we are dealing with. There's no two ways about that. Keep the tweets coming in. Dean Henderson will be with me in about 90 seconds time, 2 minutes time. We nearly had a mishap today because there was a time change in Dean's neck of the woods this weekend. And when I said to Dean, come on with me today, Dean, at noon, thinking that Dean was 6 hours behind me, but in fact it's shortened because of the time change. He's only 5 hours behind us now, and I messed up. I always mess up when the clocks change, but Dean is he's sharing the blame for it today. Hi to Busy as well. Hi to Rich. Did I mention David Stanford, to Murray as well. Who cares what the media says? It's all fake anyway, says Murray. It is. It is, but it's important to highlight what is being discussed in the media so that you can then take it apart, deconstruct it, and explain to people, you know, this is what's really happening in some cases, and in other cases, be humble enough to say, well, I don't know what's really happening, but I can tell you that what they are saying is happening is untrue. That's important as well. I want to say hi to my friend Phil Restino in Florida. How you doing, Phil? Makes a good point about nationalism. Talked about nationalism earlier on. I need to take some water. I'll do that in a second. The New World Order has accomplished quite well, Richie, demonising the word nationalism as racist, etc. Hey, who's going to want to be called a racist? Very smart, those NWO bastards, says Phil. And they're bought and paid for media and foundation-funded left only need apply social justice and activist groups. That's right. They have turned the word nationalist into a dirty word, into something that you wouldn't want to aspire to be. You know, they've turned nationalist into something that makes people think it evokes images of knuckle-draggers. Knuckle-draggers. Like the aforementioned Tommy the Tit Robinson, who only a year or so ago was introduced by a man. Now, if you're easily offended, close your ears. If you've got children in the room, they're doomed already, so it doesn't matter. If you're easily offended, close your ears. This is a guy who, just over a year ago, was introduced to a crowd in London by a man with a microphone. Standing next to Tommy Robinson, Stephen Yaxley Lennon, the guy said, let's introduce Tommy Robinson, blah, blah, blah. Send all the niggers home, he said. And what did Tommy the Tit do? He didn't smack him over the head with the microphone. He laughed at him, took the microphone and then proceeded to spew his horrible crap. Which, by the way, I will fight to the death for his right to do that. Which I've said 1,000 times before. Wouldn't lock him up, wouldn't ban him. Let him say it so that we can see what he is. And nothing. Another acute narcissistic personality disorder. Tommy. Look at his YouTube videos. Tommy Robinson being persecuted. Tommy, refer to myself in the third person. Nonsense. Has to take his penis out to count to 11. No brains. Said it before. That's the knuckle dragger that they want you to think of when they use the term nationalist. When genuine nationalists are a million miles away from that lunatic. Let's get Dean Henderson on the line. And when we do that, I'm going to have a sip of water. Not much I can tell you about Dean Henderson that you don't know before. He's a broadcaster, an author. His books are terrific. You can find him at hendersonlefthook.wordpress.com. That's hendersonlefthook.wordpress.com. His books are terrific. I'll tweet out links to him. You can follow him on Twitter as well. Former candidate for the Democratic Party. He appears and has appeared on some stellar television and radio programmes. He's got a unique take on geopolitics. He's always brilliantly briefed. Let's welcome back to the programme our friend Dean Henderson. Dean, welcome back.
Hey, Richie. Glad we got it figured out. The old clock people kind of screwed us up there. The Illuminati like to throw us off with this clock stuff every once in a while, but we got it figured out.
I'm an idiot, really, because I know at the back of my mind that around about this time of year, there are staggered clock changes. And the first one is in your neck of the woods, so I should have been looking out for it. But thank God, because I know you and Jill have plenty to do. You've got stuff to write, people to see. So the fact that you've hung around, even though I messed the time up, I'm really proud of you for doing that. Thanks for doing it. How are you, by the way?
Good. I'm doing some planting today. We got spring coming, and so I actually used the last hour to go out and plant some chard and some kale and some carrots and getting the garden going, you know?
Sounds idyllic, Dean. It sounds idyllic, and I do mean that. I love it. I'm in the middle of a big city where most of the time I hear sirens, police cars, ambulances. I just hear noise, and it's driving me crazy. So it sounds absolutely idyllic. Dean, of course, in case you haven't heard, Dean, before I'm sure you have, is in the Ozarks with his amazing wife, Jill, who's been on this programme as well. Let's jump straight into a few things. And by the way, take the conversation in any direction you want to go. I'm sure there are things you'd like to discuss. Can I just throw into the mix the interesting reaction by the right wing and the left wing media to comments made about the Israeli influence in US politics by the Democratic Congresswoman Ilhan Omar? Wow, they've piled in on this woman, Dean, for asking a fairly fair question. Why do we have to pledge allegiance to a foreign nation? Are you watching this with interest?
Yeah, I actually wrote my last column about it. We had a pretty interesting outcome, you know, because the first thing she said was, you know, it's all about the Benjamins, and didn't say one single word about Jews or even Zionists or anybody. And they jumped all over, and then she kind of apologized, and a lot of us were dismayed at that. And then she kind of took a U-turn, and she kind of doubled down, and then she said at a town hall meeting in Washington, D.C., she said, well, why should I have to pledge an allegiance to a foreign country, which Alan Dershowitz and a bunch of other, you know, Israeli-American, basically traitors to this country, because their allegiance isn't to America, it's to Israel. So these are the people that should be called out. But anyway, she doubled down on it, and it worked. And that's what happens. This is the dynamic, you know, when they go after you for telling the truth, you can't go and cower in a corner. You have to basically come at them and keep exposing them, keep shining a light on them. That's kind of what she did. So when they had the vote, it was supposed to happen on Wednesday, you know, because the Zionist lobby, the ADL, Anti-Defamation League, and AIPAC, they pressured the Democratic Party because Ilhan's a member of that. To have, you know, to sponsor this bill that would, you know, denounce Zionism and stuff. And so what happened was the Progressive Caucus in the Congress and the Black Caucus, which are the two really only decent parts of the Democrat Party, because that represents the real left in America, not the fake left. They got behind her, and it was mostly women congressmen, Presley from Massachusetts, Ocasio-Cortez, this Pradyup from Washington, who's of Indian descent, and even Bernie Sanders then came out, a couple of senators, Elizabeth Warren even came out, which surprised me, and they both, all to a T were saying, well, wait a minute, you know, if we're going to denounce this supposed anti, you know, Israeli or anti-Jewish sentiment, which it, of course, wasn't, then we better denounce hate in all forms, including Islamophobia, white supremacy, and blah, blah, blah. Which, you know, of course, there's no need to have any bill doing any such thing on any of that stuff. But at least she kind of turned the tables on them. And it wasn't just a bill that criticized anti-Semitism, you know, towards Jewish people. So, yeah, it was a really interesting dynamic. And I think the last part of that is where the mainstream media, you know, sort of went quiet. And so a lot of the alternative media haven't picked up on what really happened there. But it was pretty interesting to see how the progressive and the Black caucus actually rallied behind her in the end. Something that I haven't seen, you know, in a very long time.
That's really interesting. I didn't know that now. And I've been following it as best as I can from here. That's really interesting. I want to ask you, and kudos to them for doing that, by the way, because they would have been getting a lot of criticism from people like me and people like you over the years. You mentioned earlier, a couple of minutes ago, they backed down. Why did they back down, so many of them? We've seen it here in the UK with the Labour Party leader, Jeremy Corbyn. They make or say things which are true and irrefutable, and then they're accused of hatred towards Jews and anti-Semitic tropes, and they wilt. They wilt. Why do they? Why did they collapse, Dean?
Well, there's no courage in the body politic anymore in the West, I think, very little. And, you know, it's a lot safer to always be backed by this crowd of idiots who go along, and most of them go along because they're paid off by AIPAC. And they get campaign contributions from these people. And so the people that get paid off are always the ones talking the loudest. And then everybody else feels like, well, I got to fold, or I'm going to be ostracized. I'm going to stick out. I'm going to be ridiculed. Well, you know, I mean, that's what happened to Jesus. And that's what happened to the Buddha. And that's what happened to Crazy Horse. And that's what happened to Einstein, even. And that's what happens to anybody, you know, Tesla, anybody that's a revolutionary thinker is going to always be ostracized, going to always be marginalized by the, you know, the masses of people who, you know, they just want to fit in. I think a lot of it just comes to people just want to fit in. And as we advance into this technological nightmare that we're experiencing, that's becoming more and more true. I mean, it's not so much they're going to have to march out these robots that are going to take our jobs, which, yeah, that's happening to a degree, but it's also sort of a threat from the oligarchy against organized labor that, well, watch out, you know, because we can always replace you with robots. But it's more that they're going to be turning us without any kind of hardwiring or anything at all, that they're already sort of turning us into robots. And what I mean by that is this kind of groupthink that's developing where people are parroting the line of whether it's the Fox News crazy right or the supposed alt-right, which doesn't exist, it's just an extension of the crazy right, or whether it's the fake left and the Clinton Soros-funded fake left, which isn't left at all, which is just kind of soft right, whether it's got to be one of those two, and you have to fit into those categories to really have a voice. And if you don't parrot what those two camps say, which, of course, the mainstream media encourages people to do, then, you know, you're crazy. I mean, you're just a crazy person. And so if you have your own mind, and if you think for yourself anymore, and if you have any sort of a bullshit meter, which is called the pineal gland, which if it hasn't been totally destroyed by fluoride, which most people's has, and you can see this bullshit for what it is, and you call it bullshit, then you're a crazy person, you know? And so that's kind of how it's gotten, because, you know, again, and I've heard you say it, it's true, it's 2 + 2 = 5, and you can't even not say it, but you can't even think it. So self-censorship becomes, you can't even think your own thoughts anymore. And everybody has to be careful, and you have to go to your safe place. And, oh, by the way, Richie, I think I'm going to become a woman because it's just safer to be transgender nowadays. So, I mean, it's just, it's madness. And the only thing people can do is just find their backbone. And, you know, if they want to be free, and if they want to be a free spirit, a free thinker, living in reality as Creator made it, instead of as is being, you know, cast upon us by these demonic entities, these aliens, these Silicon Valley freaks that are working for the dark side, working for DARPA, working for the NSA. We all know what that really is. And so, you know, it's always been like this, but as technology advances, it's much easier yet to sort of do mass mind control. You know, MK Ultra was individual mind control for individual, you know, military missions. But what they've learned now is to do this mass mind control, where there's this fake consensus of everything, and it's all lies. And so the people that are willing to aren't willing to tell lies fall outside of that, and they're becoming increasingly marginalized, ostracized, and now, as we see, you know, attacked by the censors of Google and YouTube and so forth, and literally deplatformed and taken off, so you can't even hear that perspective. I just noticed, the anti-vax people have been under attack for the last week. Well, this week it's the chemtrails. Every chemtrails YouTube video now has a thing below it that says contrails, and it defines contrails as if, oh, this is a lie, and these are actually contrails coming out of these planes, you know. So
that's an outrage.
The news is tightening.
I didn't know that. I didn't know that. So if I went on YouTube now and looked at a certain video about chemtrails, YouTube has basically put a disclaimer underneath it saying, wink, wink, all of the above is bullshit.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, at least on my computer, because it's always different.
I've seen something like that. I know they've done it to RT. On the RT videos, it says RT is owned and operated by the Russian government or something like that. You know, right. So what? What do you think the BBC is, morons?
Yeah, right. You know? Who do you think owns NBC? Oh, General Electric. Well, yeah. Just a little disclaimer. General Electric is a Crown agent. It's a subsidiary of a Crown agency corporation.
Yeah.
But of course, they won't do that, you know. No, it's all just, you know, now they got the algorithm sorting it out and reinforcing the lie. And so they don't even have to. So it's a military operation, and it's called mass mind control. And it's really beyond anything Aldous Huxley or George Orwell could have described to us, although it's very eerily similar in some ways, because both those guys were part of the club and knew exactly what was coming.
Yeah, they were uncannily accurate. Dean Henderson is our guest. HendersonLeftHooked.wordpress.com. You wrote a brilliant piece, by the way, on Venezuela. I'd like to chat about that, if that's okay with you. Like I said, I don't normally say that to guests. I normally dictate what we talk about, which is probably not good. But with you coming on today, we've not spoken for a while. But talk about Venezuela. The last thing I would say about Ilhan Omar is I wonder, has she and others looked at what happened to Cynthia McKinney? Because Cynthia McKinney didn't back down when they came after her and continued to talk about the pact and the pledge and what Israel was doing and how it employed its lobby in DC, and eventually they destroyed her. And maybe that would give a moment of pause to somebody like Ilhan Omar and others. And maybe they think, you know, I don't agree with them, but maybe they think, I can do more good if I'm here than if I'm not, than if I'm kicked out or voted out. I don't know. Do you want a final word on that before we talk about Venezuela?
Well, I think, you know, the thing that I came away with it on Omar, she didn't back down in the end. I mean, she did and then she didn't. And I think she heard from people like us talking about that she shouldn't have. And then she changed course. And I mean, anytime you're going after these people, you have to keep the spotlight on yourself while the controversy exists, because by doing that, you can turn the tables on them, which is exactly what she did to Apex. She turned the tables on them. She drug them out of the closet, out of their lair, and she exposed them for what they were. Then the very next day, somebody asked her about Obama and if he was a good president. He said, he was just a pretty face, you know, which is, you know, so she just kind of kept on offense at some point. And yeah, Cynthia McKinney did the same and she got run out. And there's no doubt they'll run somebody in this Minnesota district against her next time. AIPAC will, and they'll fund them. But hey, you know, you got 2 years, Omar. And I think she knows that. And I don't think she gives a rat's ass. I think she's just like, this is the truth, and I'm going to tell the truth. And I mean, I really kind of developed a lot of respect for her through the course of this. And
good stuff, so I think, Dean.
You know, no, go ahead, Richie.
No, I'm happy to hear that. I'm happy to be contradicted, because you see, I've said about Jeremy Corbyn over the last 3 years, I've said, if he was genuine, in other words, if he wasn't compromised by the intelligence agencies who might hold some embarrassing information about him, if he wasn't, surely Corbyn would realise, just as you eloquently said there, I've only got a couple of years in the spotlight before they get rid of me and before they go back to a Blairite party. So during that time, I'm just going to say whatever the hell I want. It's very, very frustrating and very, it's very upsetting for people in this country who believed in Corbyn. I never did, I'm proud to say, so I don't feel bad at all. But some of my friends are gutted, Dean. They're devastated that he hasn't done what you've educated me that Omar has done and kept on the offensive, thinking, I'll only be here for 3 years. I'll have a go, you know?
Yeah, and most people, you know, so many of them are worried about their career and their long term, and you know, they want to stay in there forever. And but just some people don't. Some people get in there somehow, they slip in there, and they just want to take a wrecking ball to the system. And I get the feeling that's what she wants to do. She said something to the effect of, you know, that when we really make people feel uncomfortable, that's when real change can happen. You know, and that's true. I mean, you know, Lenny Bruce. I mean, you can't just go around talking mealy mouthed and telling half truths and stuff. That's not going to do anything. Plus, people aren't going to like you, you know. But if you're genuine and you tell the whole truth, A, you make change, and B, you actually might have a chance of getting reelected no matter what AIPAC does, because people respect that. They respect people that are genuine and not phony.
You know? It's very interesting that one of the recent stars of Fox News, Judge Jeanine Pirro, a dreadful excuse for a presenter, has been attacking the hijab and suggesting that it's un-American and unconstitutional. This is the sort of childish crap that this identity politics that they play. Dean Henderson is my guest, live from Missouri, the Ozarks, beautiful place. Lovely to hear you talking earlier on about planting a bit of kale. You've got some life there, my friend, but you deserve every bit of it. Brilliant piece last week on hendersonlefthook.wordpress.com called Beware the Rothschild's Trojan Horse. And Dean is writing about what's happening in Venezuela and about how it's part of a decades-long plan for that region. You don't just blame Donald Trump for it. It's been going on for years. But then you talk in the piece about the anti-war movement or the lack of it. And I want to read a paragraph that will definitely get the attention of our listeners. Dean writes, and I have tweeted the article out so people can read it. Again, many of our listeners, they knew you before they ever knew me. They've been on the website. This is Dean. This Rothschild Soros psyop is itself a domestic Trojan horse, which has derailed any semblance of a real anti-war pro-union left in the US and replaced it with yet more neoliberal consensus-driven cyborgs who rant and rave about gun control, transgender nonsense, hashtag MeToo victimhood, and all manner of divisive garble. Now, this will be of great interest to my friend Phil Restino in Florida, who also laments the destruction of the genuine anti-war movement in the US. Phil is a peace activist. He's a top man. Tell us about this psyop to destroy the anti-war left in the US, the genuine one, and how that's come about.
Well, I think it started with the colored revolutions that you saw overseas under Obama, and how effective that was for the CIA and the military-industrial complex to do these things in Georgia and in Lebanon and Ukraine, in Egypt, Tunisia, all these places, Libya. And, you know, that was all open society money from George Soros using NGOs. I mean, they've always used USAID kind of as a, you know, when you see aid starting to pour into a country, you know, the CIA is right behind it. Or when you see the Peace Corps go into a country, you know, the CIA is right behind it. But now they've got these NGOs going, and Soros is really the driving force. So Soros, first thing you have to know is that Soros has always been the Rothschild family's number one political lieutenant. I mean, there's nobody that's done more for them. Kissinger is sort of the Rockefeller guy, and Soros is the Rothschild guy. So then you have to ask yourself, why would the Rothschilds be funding these colored revolutions? Well, of course, that's about resources. That's about privatizing the economy of Ukraine, since it produces the most barley in the Eastern Hemisphere, for example. It's the breadbasket of the Eastern Hemisphere. So that's obvious. It's about resources. But then it goes domestic. And just about the time of this last election with Clinton, the Clinton Foundation kicking in a bunch of money, because they're allied with these people. They're of the same mindset. They're members of the oligarchy. And so they turned it inwardly, and they started funding Black Lives Matter, which became just a really divisive, you know, kind of a hate movement, blacks towards whites, and didn't talk about class, didn't talk about any conspiracies, didn't talk about who was fomenting this stuff, just kind of, you know, pretty much turned into a race war. And then you have to look at, you know, all of these other organizations. Yeah, the hashtag MeToo movement, all these diversions that are happening in America. And it, what's happened is the left has been hijacked. And you know, it makes sense if you sit back and think about it. If you're the oligarchy, you know, if you're the Rothschilds, if you're the royal families of the world, who, you know, your wealth is just growing every year, being concentrated more and more, you're squeezing the middle class, basically getting rid of the middle class in all these Western countries and sending them into poverty so that they're basically on par now with these so-called third world countries, which you've always kept in poverty by stealing their resources. So if you're going to do that, you have to ratchet up the intensity of the psychological warfare on those people, and you have to lie to them, and you have to keep them diverted on issues that don't matter, like LGBT, like gun control, like all these social wedge issues that have always divided Democrats and Republicans. And you have to turn them away from any attention on that oligarchy or the machinations of that oligarchy, which manifests itself in U.S. foreign policy, because, you know, the U.S. is a Hessianized mercenary force of the Rothschilds. We, you know, they work, they don't work for the betterment of American people. They work for the betterment of the City of London bankers and the royal families. And that's why, you know, you see the face of John Bolton and Mike Pompeo and Elliot Abrams and these hideous people out front of Trump, and Trump himself, of course, hideous. But these people are traitors. To my mind, they don't represent America. They represent the crown control of the world, which is why the Bank of England is the bank holding all the money and the gold of the Venezuelans right now, which
over
they
a billion.
I'm sure use to get their power grid up and ready to get the food on the shelves, which, you know, as we know, is a lie anyway. Max Blumenthal exposed it. So, but really what happened is they turned all of this knowledge of using NGOs, using, you know, nonprofits to steer foreign revolutions. And then they said, well, let's try that in the U.S. And that's what's going on. And that's what explains, you know, this fake left, which is triggered by the word Trump. They just can't get off the word Trump. I mean, they can't go anywhere else. They just, and their hatred has gotten so bad at Trump that they're full of more hatred than Trump and his supporters. And so they're just at each other's throats talking about nothing. And meanwhile, the 5G gets rolled out. The vaccination schedule gets ratcheted up to 69 before you're 8 years old. The depopulation program commences apace. The wars for the neocons, who are crown agents, the neocons are crown agents, all of them, expand into Venezuela. Watch for Bolivia now with Evo Morales. He's going to be next on the block. Nicaragua, Cuba, the Troika of Tyranny, Iran, of course. And so, so they're having to do this to domestically because they have to get rid of the anti-war movement, and they also have to get rid of any notion of a class conflict, which they have brought upon us. I mean, the class war has been brought upon us by the wealthy. And the only thing the working class has to decide to do is, are we going to fight back, and are we going to participate in that class war? Are we going to go at them? Are we just going to roll over and talk about LGBT and go to our safe place?
This is outstanding.
Big pussies, really.
It's outstanding analysis, this. And every man and woman in the world, regardless of what your ethnicity is or where you come from, everything Dean Henderson has said there, he's right. And I learned and came to understand this through reading books by people like Dean Henderson. He is right. It is classic divide and conquer, which I never understood until I was in my late 20s, early 30s. Dean talked about the Black Lives Matter movement there. He wasn't saying for a minute that blacks weren't being murdered or gunned down by lunatic, trigger-happy police officers. But the idea that it was only happening to black people was crazy and it was false. And identity politics is used by these entities Dean is talking about so that we'll never come together, so that we won't come together and go, hey, listen, we've got a common enemy here. What's going on? And we end up in our communities hating one another because of the differences that they have shone a microscope on, Dean. That's how I've come to see this, you know? And they've brainwashed us into seeing that. I spoke about trans rights earlier on. I had a rant about a trans activist. But the truth is, I don't care what you identify as or what you want to do. You're a brother or a sister of mine. We're all in it together. Ultimately, we've got the same enemy. But as long as we're killing one another, and I hate to admit it, but you are right. The fake left with the hatred for the alt-right and Trump supporters. It's so destructive, it's so small-minded, and it's so wrong. They're moving so far away from the reality of how we're being manipulated, how we're being controlled, who's doing it, and why they're doing it. And they'll get away with it so long as we are mired in identity politics, so long as we become identitarians, so long as we fight and argue over who's the biggest victim of the system. It's not you, Dean. I'm a bigger victim than you. Rather than say, hey, Dean, we're both under the hammer here. Let's do something about it.
Yeah, let's be proactive. Let's offer solutions. Let's, you know, you look at the Black Panthers, for example, you know, back in the 60s. I mean, you know, they weren't like that. I mean, they didn't hate white people. I mean, they hated cops. Yeah, because the cops were part of the system. But not even individually as cops, but just the fact that cops represent, they always defend the rich people. They always defend the property of the rich. That's what cops are for. I mean, you have to understand that. Cops aren't here to protect you and I. Cops aren't here to protect Black people. Cops aren't here to protect Indians or anything like that. They're here to protect the rich. And they knew that. But they always tried to reach across to white people. And in fact, there were white members of the Black Panthers. And they fed their kids and they had, you know, they passed out school books to kids. And that's where they started. They didn't even start as a violent. They were never violent. They just carried guns. And then the cops got violent on them. You know, Malcolm X, I mean, he was at first, he did hate white people. He came back from Africa and he changed his tune. And he said, no, I was wrong. You know, I shouldn't have hated white people. It's not white people. It's the system. It's, you know, and he became more of a Pan-Africanist, you know, which means, you know, understanding that it's a form of nationalism. I heard you talk about nationalism earlier, how it's been turned into a dirty word. And it has been. But see, the Black Panthers were Black nationalists and they were hardly Tommy Robinson right wing thugs. You were there. No. I mean, they were people with some sense. And just like the word populism now, that's been trashed by the fake left, you know, and the Southern Poverty Law Center. But see, I have to understand that all this that goes on with Soros money and with Clinton Foundation money is being carried out by this network of Hasbara agents in this country and probably in Britain, I'm sure, too. And these are Israeli agents that are deep cover. They're put into environmental groups. They're put into the leaderships of environmental groups, the leadership of human rights groups, the leadership of any kind of social justice organizations. Over the years, I've seen this over and over, no matter where I've lived. You see these people that emerge as the leaders of these what look like left-wing organizations, and they turn out to be these Hasbara agents of the state of Israel. So they're the ones that are deliberately diverting our attention from what really matters and deliberately dividing us with all these uber politically correct crazy things that are going on right now, this victimization and this narcissism that's going on. It's all in it, part of the agenda of the oligarchy. And of course, the Mossad always works for the crown as sort of their number one intelligence service. And they're doing the same thing here with this dumbing down of the Western population via all of this political correctness tyranny is what it is. It's basically an attack on the First Amendment, attack on free speech, attack on free thought, and attack on unity. Yes. And you're right. We have to stay united. We're all in this boat together. There's nobody's a bigger victim than the next guy. We're, you know, but you know, like the first chapter of my Sticking It to the Matrix book, love the people, hate the system. That's so important. Love the people, hate the system. It's okay to hate the system. It's not an animate thing. It's a capitalist, ugly, medieval. You know, right now we're in this stage of, I call it, you know, it's electronic feudalism. That's where it is right now. And they got us all kind of wired into this crap. And so, again, it's so much easier to create this hate with social media and Facebook and these things, these Twitter stormers. And they're again, these are Hasbara agents who are there to do just that. They go in, they inflame the situation, and they just create these two camps that hate each other. They don't even know each other, but all of a sudden they hate each other. And it just, what a waste of time. What a monumental waste of time. So there's nobody being proactive. There's nobody, you know, doing anything proactive to change things or to propose an initiative or to come up with ideas about how he can make it better. It's all just this real reactionary stuff that doesn't do anything.
David Icke said to me one time, Dean Henderson is our guest. Henderson, lefthook.wordpress.com. This is must-listen stuff, folks. Later on, when this is on iTunes and on Spotify, share it with people. It's really important. You know, I haven't spoken about identity politics for ages, and Dean has brilliantly segued into this. It's really important that, yes, be proud of what you look like and where you came from and your ethnicity, by all means, but it doesn't define you. It's not the be-all and the end-all of you, and you're not a victim. You know, yes, maybe some of your ancestors were, but you're not. David Icke said to me one time, it got me thinking for ages and ages, and I know you've done a lot of work as well into the nature of reality and whether this consciousness is actually real, and I'm fascinated by this. And we were talking about children using virtual reality headsets. And David Icke said to me, he said, Rich, if you think about it, when the kids are using those headsets, they are actually now, when the headset is on, they are two steps away, or like two blocks away from reality, from themselves. So I said, explain. And he said, well, if the world is a hologram, if this is an illusion anyway, we are here as conscious beings, but the world itself is only there because we download it or program it down. Well, then by just me speaking with you now, Dean, we are already one step away from reality. And what Icke said was that when you're living online, you're actually, you've moved one more step or one more block or one more street away from reality. And that's been going around and around in my head since he taught me that a couple of years ago. And you've just talked about now being online all the time and what it's doing to people. Do you go along with that?
Yeah, I do. And I would add to that, that you don't have to download that program. You know, that if you, and I learned a lot from Native American people on this level, spiritually, but if you understand the actual nature of reality, you know, the actual way that nature works, the natural processes that occur. And if you can stay in that grounded reality, then you don't have to download that reality that they're trying to get you to download. And they've been doing it for a long time, you know, a long time. Edward Bernays, you know, the advent of television, the advent of MK Ultra, the DARPANET came out in 86. The internet, the World Wide Web, the spiders in the middle. It's still the same oligarchy. It's still the same bloodlines, the royal families that are the spider. And but now it's a net and you're in it. And so the program, we have to remember who the program's coming from. I just think that's so important to remember, that the program is coming from the same bloodline oligarchs that have been running this world for thousands of years now. And you don't have to download the program. But yes, I agree. If you know, the more you're on the internet, the further into that download you get, the more downloading you're doing. I mean, literally, you're downloading things more and more. And Google, of course, the algorithms take you to the sites it wants. The Rothschilds want you to see certain sites. So they're not going to give you my site right up the top. They're not going to give Richie Allen's site at the top. They're going to do some other stuff, which is lies. Wikipedia is a big one. And they're going to give you that garbage because it's part of the program. It's part of the download that they want you to download. But the whole of reality has been for some time, you know, there's reality that the animals and the trees and the air and the water and everything exists in and humans used to exist in. And then there's this kind of projection screen that's been pulled down in front of us. And we're supposed to see that instead, and that's the download. We're supposed to see that instead. And with the advent of television, that's when that really intensified. And the advent of the computer and the internet, it's a doubling down of the download. And then you get a kind of a feedback loop where there's so many people that are online all the time, or so many people watching television all the time, that the lies that the oligarchs can project through those screens. Whether it's through, you know, commercials or sitcoms where you're supposed to screw over your buddy and it's funny if you do, and if you're nice, you're just kind of a waif that lives in a van by the river, you know, or all these, you know, this garbage, then the more people get dumbed down by this, then they in turn go around apologizing to the Benjamin, see, and prostrating themselves towards the oligarchy, and they become sort of the thought police against anybody who doesn't do that. Which is like me and you and David, you know, and people like that. And then we get marginalized and we get isolated and we get ridiculed, just like Jesus did, because Jesus didn't accept the download either. And I'm not, you know, of any religious tradition, but Jesus was, to my understanding, a pretty cool guy. And so was Crazy Horse. And so, you know, so were a lot of people. But those people that we look up to, they didn't accept the download. See, they saw through the projection screen to actual reality, actual suffering that it was, that fake reality was causing people. And then they tried to do something about it. But the only way we can do anything about it is if we can first realize that there's a screen there that they're pulling down in front of us and kind of bust through that screen. And then we can start going, oh, okay, well, then that's reality. That's really what's going on. You know, how many tens of thousands of kids now, you know, dead in Yemen from, you know, the different things that, that the Saudis and the British and the Americans are doing there. And okay, there's, that's busting the screen. Well, there it is. Or, oh, Venezuela, I get it. They want the oil. That's pretty simple. Rockefellers do run Venezuela. It's a fact through a guy named Gustavo Cisneros. And he's a Bank of Nova Scotia board of directors guy. He's Venezuelan. He's the biggest oligarch in Venezuela. And the Rockefellers own a lot of land and a lot of farms in Venezuela as well, more than any other country in South America. And in fact, this Lima group that rallied behind Guaido, the puppet, is a creation of David Rockefeller, just like the Caribbean Basin Initiative was, which created Haiti as the bottom of the rung slave wage platform country in the Western Hemisphere, where they could pay him 40 cents a day to make baseballs or whatever. So it's all, that's all beyond the screen. That's
why didn't Maduro, why hasn't Maduro, and why didn't Chavez before, going back, Chavez, why weren't these people arrested and either exiled or charged for whatever crimes they did commit, and if found guilty, then put in prison? You see, a lot of people are upset that this puppet, as you described him, Juan Guaido, was able to waltz back into Caracas last week, where he was greeted by diplomats from other countries, and he was able to swan around. Why don't, you know, I don't want people to be murdered, I don't believe in the death penalty, or any of that, but due process. Is Maduro being a bit silly when it comes to dealing with these people, this guy from this banker you talked about, this Rockefeller plant? Why doesn't he arrest these people?
Yeah, it's a good question. And I don't know if I know the answer, and I don't know if I know what I'd do either, because, you know, on the one hand, if you arrest him, the guy's in jail. He did commit a crime. My God, he's a traitor. It's treason. It's called treason. So yeah, they'd be perfectly justified just to hang the guy in a public square. On the other hand, put him in jail, he becomes a martyr. Put him in jail, you're going to ratchet up the anger and the justification of the West. And they can sew that into their propaganda and say, oh yeah, see, we told you so. Maduro, he's a real tyrant. He put that guy in jail, da da da. I just think as long as everything's going pretty good for Maduro, and I get the feeling it's going pretty good right now. See, I don't think this is working.
No, I don't either. Very good. And tell me why you don't think it's working for America.
Because I think the Bolivarian socialism is so ingrained in the Venezuelan people. I mean, when you're starved out for decades by this group of oligarchs that run the country, I mean, when you're walking around Caracas or you're sitting on a corner begging because your kid doesn't have a meal that day, and you see these Alfa Romeos driving by with these people in suits and these big banks on every corner, and you realize, wow, there's only these few people. And then all of a sudden here comes Chavez. And I was in Venezuela twice during that period, when, you know, pre-Chavez. And it was horrible. I mean, you fly in, the first thing you see are these slums going up the hillsides of Caracas and just unbearable poverty. And then, yeah, you see this other thing with this handful of oligarchs running the show. So, I mean, once Chavez came in and got rid of that and gave free food and free education and put clinics in all these barrios and built houses for people, you're not going to take that away very easy, see? And that's what I think the West and John Bolton and all these idiots, they just don't understand it because they're so detached from reality and caught up in this American exceptionalism bullshit that they don't have any clue how most of the world actually has to live under their dictators like Guaido, because Guaido is the potential dictator here, obviously.
Yeah.
So they don't have any idea how ingrained this socialism is in the minds of most Venezuelans. And for example, shortly after they marched out Guaido, there was some violence in the streets in Venezuela, and it wasn't Maduro's people that were dying. It was the oligarchs that were dying. Because not from Maduro's military forces, but from the people of Venezuela, from the vanguard of the revolution, the people of Venezuela. They're not going to give this up easy. And anybody that thinks different is pretty much an idiot. But these people are idiots. They really are.
You would have been really ashamed of me last week. I didn't admit this to anybody. I'm admitting it now. I was very embarrassed. I was watching, I came back the week before last. And last week I was preparing a show and I was watching TV, Sky or something. And they were coming from Caracas and I'm watching it and I'm listening to it and I'm watching it. And there's a sense of dread coming over me. And I'm thinking, wow, this Guaido, he really has the support of the people, you know. They really seem to be kind of weighing in behind him. And I was honestly thinking that. And then it occurred to me, you fucking moron, you're watching Sky News. What else are they going to tell you? I honestly had a moment of depression. And then I thought, right, yeah. And I just went to some independent sources, of course, and to some channels on LiveLeak and on YouTube by socialists in Venezuela. And I went, yeah, that's how it really is. For a minute, though, I had a moment. I thought, don't admit that to anybody. But, yeah, the Western media wants us to believe that there's a big groundswell of support for the puppet and the liars whom he represents. But, of course, there isn't.
Yeah, and that's how powerful that Western media is. You know? And I believe me, I have those moments, too. You're not alone. That even people like us who know better, you know, can fall under. It's a magic spell, okay? That's what it comes down to. All of this stuff, when you take it to the next level, you know, it's really like a magic spell that they're trying to get us to believe in, and they're not showing us the trick or how they do it, you know, to keep us sort of mystified by the whole process. And it's Luciferian, it really is, because it inverts reality. And this is what you're seeing now, this massive deception. I mean, it's always been this, you know, deception's always been a part of their formula, but now it's they're actually taking the entire language and they're inverting its meaning, you know, to the point where, you know, inclusiveness, that's supposed to be a good thing. Well, is inclusiveness a good thing if you want to be part of the mind controlled cyborg, you know, or if you want to be part of the victimhood, or if you want to, I mean, is that, well, that's how they're using it. So in that case, inclusion, don't include anyone. Just try to keep to yourself. Tolerance, is that a good word? Well, sure. To liberals, that's a good word. Like me and you, old time liberals. Yeah, we're all tolerant. We're very tolerant people. You know, leave us alone. We leave you alone. Da da da. But now, no, tolerant. Tolerant of what? Tolerant of evil? Tolerant of interventions in Venezuela? Tolerant of people that want to go to a safe room and every time somebody offends them and we're supposed to feel bad about it? I mean, so it's either just taking the entire language and almost like going through it word for word and turn it upside down to where good words are bad words now. Open-minded. Really? You want to be open-minded nowadays? Are you sure about that? So that your mind can be controlled and you know, the sieve of internet bullshit can be dumped into your cranium? I mean, maybe it's time for you to close your mind a little bit. Remember who you are. Go back to your history and realize your life lessons before the internet and what you learned, and be okay with that for a little while and just see how things shake out. You know, because it's really crazy what they're doing right now. And that's why you get this fake left. And that's why the left is really the target of this psyop, because they know that the only thing that can ever stop this oligarchy, this bloodline oligarchy, is actual socialism, actual redistribution of wealth. You know, and it's not, you know, people talk about, oh, you can't redistribute the wealth. Well, wait a minute. They stole all the wealth to begin with. They stole our wealth. They've stole our wealth from day one. Whether it was the Native Americans, whether it was the farmland in this country, the fact that, you know, most people used to live on farms 300 years ago, 98%, now 2% live on farms. What happened? The oligarchy stole the land. That's what happened. So it's not like we're just taking their resources.
Yes.
We're getting in return to us what they already stole from us.
This is hugely important, because I was watching Hannity for my sins over the weekend. And I'm not violent, but I'd love to get a hold of Hannity. I'd love to have a minute in a room with him. And I don't claim to be a tough guy, but I can look after myself. I've had to take measures over the years to take care of myself. I'd love to have a go at Hannity. But anyway, they're talking about socialism. When they say socialism, they mean social democracy or social democrats. They don't understand socialism. And I'm going to give you the final word on this. I understand socialism. You've described it beautifully there. What Salvador Allende in Chile did and what Hugo Chavez did in Venezuela was they didn't take money from people that were wealthy, like factory owners and shop owners and business owners. No, they did not. In fact, under Allende and under Chavez, those that were doing well, middle class people and, you know, wealthy people, they weren't robbed of their money. this is the greatest lie in modern history. What Allende and Chavez did, and you've described it beautifully, is they went and took from the cabal. That's what they took. Allende took copper back. He took land back. Chavez did the same. They didn't steal from people who'd built a three-story house and who had horses. They didn't do that. Thanks for saying that, Dean. I'm going to give you the final word on that, my friend, and then I can't believe how quick the time has flown, but I'm going to ask you to come back again in early April. Final word on this to you. hendersonlefthook.wordpress.com. Buy the man's book. Support brilliant journalism. Dean, final word, my friend. You've got to, if you want 90 seconds, you've got to go ahead.
Great. Thanks for having me again, Rich. It's really, I always enjoy talking with you, man. So, you know,
a pleasure.
Well, yeah, you're right about Chile and you're right about Chavez. And, you know, this has happened over and over. In Chile, it was Anaconda Copper, which is a Rockefeller controlled company, straight up. And of course, Kissinger was Secretary of State at the time for Nixon. So it was accomplished pretty easily with the fake trucker strike. Again, a fake left trucker strike that brought down the government of Allende. But the key is nationalization of the resources of the cartel. So like we can talk all day to our blue in the face about, you know, the trouble with vaccines and we can try to do something within the Department of Health, for example, but it won't work because you've got Merck, Pfizer, GlaxoSmithKline. It's a drug cartel. It's a big pharma cartel. You can talk all day about, you know, doing something in the ag department, putting more money to small farms or whatever. But until you break up the Cargill, ADM, Tyson food cartel, you won't get anywhere. You can talk to your blue in the face in the energy department about, oh, we should put more money into alternative energy. But until you break up the Exxon Mobil, Royal Dutch Shell, BP Amoco, Chevron Texaco, Four Horsemen oil cartel, you won't get anywhere. Why? Because these companies in every sector I just talked about and every other one, media, six companies, so on, are being the government agencies that are supposed to regulate those corporations are now under the control of the cartel. So the cartel tells the government agency what to do to protect its interests. So what we need to be real socialists is to start breaking up these cartels. And then we can actually get it to where a government actually serves the people. But, you know, that's why Allende nationalized copper. I mean, we should nationalize, to my mind, the oil industry, the mining industry, the food processing industry, the banking industry. In other words, nationalize the Federal Reserve. And the insurance industry, I've always said, I said it when I ran for Congress, these five industries, if you nationalize those five industries, you'd go a long ways towards helping farmers, towards helping to create an alternative energy situation, towards getting people out from under the thumb of these insurance cartels, which are just money laundries for the royal families, all based in the Bahamas and Bermuda. You'd get a long ways away from big pharma. And, you know, you would just have a whole different system. But you have to break the cartels up first. And that's what I don't think people really understand. And that's what has to happen. And I'd say land reform is the other thing that a real socialist would do right now. Just land reform. Just Ted Turner, you got too much land here. We'll compensate you for it. We're not just going to confiscate it like Pol Pot or something. But we'll give you money for it. But, dude, we got to have some of your land. We want to give this land to people or no interest loans to people, say. Go out and grow some food on this.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Because he's sitting on millions of acres of land that he's doing fuck all with. So piss off. Absolutely right. See, people will say, oh, socialism. In that case, Turner, it couldn't hurt Turner. You're absolutely right, Dean. We're just, we're sadly just about out of time on this. We'll pick this up again with your permission early next month, by the way. We'll make this a more regular occurrence as we were doing anyway last year in the autumn. Yeah. Give Jill a regards, by the way, Dean. It's hendersonlefthook.wordpress.com. Links there to Big Oil and their bankers in the Persian Gulf. Brilliant. Illuminati, Agenda 21, and Jill's books as well about growing food, about real food, about saving seed. Amazing stuff. It's a really brilliant website with great resources on there. And he doesn't ask you for anything for it. Where you can donate and where you can help out, please do. hendersonlefthook.wordpress.com. That was brilliant, Dean. Thanks, mate.
Thanks for having me, Richie, and keep the fight.
Look forward to speaking again in April, it'll be. Cheers, Dean. I really appreciate that. The brilliant Dean Henderson, absolutely top man, is Dean. He's great, isn't he? That is pretty much it for today's programme. I'll be back with you again tomorrow at 5 p.m. UK time. I'm losing my voice tonight. I don't know why that is. I've not been shouting or anything. And I'm hale. And hearty, by the way. had a run this morning, had a good run, not killing or trying to kill myself with the running as maybe I was doing in the past, but a good run this morning, and I'm in good shape and in fine fettle. Right, very quick word about tomorrow's programme. I'll be joined by John Wedger, the independent inquiry into child sex abuse, which of course is headed up by Professor Alexis J, taking place. Well, it's ongoing. It's been ongoing now for a couple of years. I know when it's expected to conclude, but off the top of my head, I can't think. But it's a long process. They're dealing with allegations made about Westminster and prominent people around Westminster, and they are hearing statements from victims who were abused or claimed to have been abused by very powerful people around Westminster. That's very important, so I want to get into that with John Wedger tomorrow. There will be a lot of news around Brexit tomorrow. I won't focus the whole first hour on Brexit tomorrow. I'll go a different direction, but then for about 30 minutes we'll have Christopher Monckton on the programme to talk about the latest on the Brexit betrayal. Christopher Monckton will do that. And I'm looking forward I'm looking forward to Russell Whiting coming on the programme on Wednesday. Russell is in Nottingham. He's a peace activist, and I came across an interview he did with RT, and I really liked the sound of him, so I've invited Russell on, and he's agreed to come on Wednesday. So some very interesting stuff coming up this week. All right. Thanks so much to Dean Henderson. Thanks, Dean. HendersonLefthook.wordpress.com. What a man. Growing kale in the Ozarks. What a life that man has. See you tomorrow. Look after yourselves. Bye.